I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
George Tenet's much-awaited book, At the Center of the Storm, has just been published. He's gotten a lot of press attention with interviews on 60 Minutes, Larry King, the morning TV talk shows, Morning Edition, and Fresh Air this afternoon, among others. Tenet left the CIA almost 3 years ago and has kept silent about the intelligence failures leading up to the war in Iraq and the deteriorating conditions in the country after the fall of Baghdad. While he has criticism for members of the Bush administration, six former CIA officers have written him a scorching letter saying that he has essentially blood on his hands for not doing more to stop the war. One of those critics joins us this morning on Radio Times. Jim Marcinkowski graduated from law school and then joined the CIA and served as a case officer in Washington, D.C. and Central America from 1985 to 1989. In 2003, he joined two former CIA agents in testifying before Congress about Valerie Plame. She was a CIA classmate of his. In 2006, he ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. Congress, defeated by Republican Mike Rogers, and he's currently the attorney for the city of Royal Oaks, Michigan. And Jim Marcinkowski, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Great.
Well, I do want to talk about the specifics in this letter, this open letter that you've written to George Tenet, but I want to begin with a more general question. Why did you and your five former CIA officers, agents, want to write this letter in the first place?
Well, everyone knows that the current conflicts around the world, especially Afghanistan and Iraq in particular, were based on intelligence. The reasons we went to war were based on intelligence. Now we have the highest-ranking intelligence official in the United States stepping forward and basically saying, look, I did the best I could, but, you know, we didn't get it right. This was the problem, that was the problem. He's pointing fingers at other administration officials when, in fact, if you're the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, you have a responsibility to the agency, you have a responsibility to the government to inform them properly, and you have an obligation, certainly, to the people of the United States. We think on all three counts that he failed in running the CIA in fulfilling his duties and responsibilities under the law.
And he said about you and the five others assigned this letter that you were 100 miles away. These are his words. I think what he's saying is that you were outside of the CIA. You weren't involved in the CIA during his tenure, and therefore he raises, I guess, criticisms about your criticisms.
Well, you know what? This is the important thing. First of all, having been in the CIA, we need to take away some of the mystique about the CIA itself. It's fairly common as far as our procedures are concerned. It's a bureaucracy. There's things that are common with other agencies, other government bureaucracies. So there's no mystique surrounding the agency, and he shouldn't use it as a defensive shield to try to stop criticism. Let me give you just one example.
Go ahead.
He talks about the slam dunk has become a very famous term now, and he claims that he was the term itself, he was taken out of context, and that he used it to describe the president's presentation of the reasons for going to war in Iraq, not the intelligence that was based on, or the decision itself to go to war. And you don't have to be inside the CIA to understand what the CIA's role is and why he stepped outside of that role. It's not the CIA's job to market intelligence, and that's what he had done. He goes out there and saying, hey, the presentation's a slam dunk. That's not his role. His role is as a neutral truth teller. He can't put spin on things. He can't arrange things in the order of what he thinks is important. He needs to tell the truth, and he needs to tell that truth at the whole all the time. If he doesn't do that, then he's not fulfilling his role. So his comments of this being a slam dunk, in whatever context it was wholly inappropriate, and everyone should know that. That's wholly inappropriate for someone who should be advising the president about the truth in a neutral manner.
And the idea, you're saying that he was part of selling the war then to the American public?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And let me give you another example.
Go ahead.
Where he failed on compromise. He's passionate. When I saw him on TV, he's passionate about describing the intelligence process as being, look, we get a certain amount of data, and we make our best estimate given the data that we have in front of us. Now, you have to remember, it's a judgment. It's a judgment call. It's an estimate. It's your best professional judgment and the tools you bring to bear, and you make a decision based on the available data. Not necessarily true facts, because that's just not the nature of an intelligence mm-hmm. community. We usually deal in nuance. So my point is, he sat right behind Colin Powell at the United Nations when Colin Powell said that weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were fact. He sat right behind him. He was reading along with that script, and he should never have allowed that word to be used. He knows it was wrong, and he allowed it to happen. There is no such thing as a fact. Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were a fact. At the time he allowed that word to be used, it would require a sample of some biological agent, a picture of it, something that shows it's, in fact, a fact.
So those vials that Colin Powell, Secretary of State, held up, and there were some pictures there, that was not a fact.
No, it wasn't a fact. If everyone recalls, and you have to refer back to the hysteria that was going around in the country, we were all panicked after 9/11. And they were talking about nuclear weapons, for example. Nuclear weapons are going to be all over the place. Here, weapons of mass destruction are a fact. Those kinds of things. And, of course, we know later that none of it was true. None of it was true. So that is not the role of the CIA director, to step forward and allow people to claim as being fact things that he knows were not facts. They may have been a good guess. They may have been a wrong guess. But they certainly were not fact. And if you go through a whole series of those little incidences that he allowed things to be twisted, that was his contribution to this war in Iraq, and that's why he's responsible. It was his obligation to make sure no one went way out there, sold the intelligence, marketed the intelligence, and allowed people to claim things that were fact when they, in fact, were not.
Well, let me play a clip, and this is actually Larry Wilkerson, Colin Powell's chief of staff at the time, talking about the conversation that George Tenet had with Colin Powell as they prepared this presentation at the UN Security Council, and this is Larry Wilkerson describing what he saw.
I remember being in that room with Secretary Powell and George Tenet, and I remember vividly the secretary turning to George and saying, George, you stand by this, right? Yes, Mr. Secretary. George, you better stand by it because you're going to be at the Security Council with me tomorrow, and you're going to be in camera.
And is that what you're talking about, Jim Marcinkowski?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That was the clip. And you can go through a whole litany of incidences like that where George Tenet participated at critical times in the build-up to this war, and he either allowed things to happen that he shouldn't have allowed, or he should have spoke up and said, wait a minute, let's think about this, let's at least slow down the process. He had the ability to go to Congress and talk to the heads of the intelligence community saying, we're rushing into this thing, we need more talk, we need more debate, or how about we need better intelligence? He never did that.
Do you think, though, that George Tenet, and this, of course, is before the war in Iraq, could have prevented, if he had done what you said he should have done, could he have prevented the United States from going to war in Iraq?
I think that's a possibility. I'm not saying I can't predict what, you know, would have, should have, or could have happened.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, here is the director of Central Intelligence, a very powerful person. Intelligence is critical to decisions about to be made by the United States. It is his role to stand up and either defend, slow down, or otherwise say, we don't have enough information, we need to be cautious about this, we're not sure about this. And I don't see anything that he has said on any of the media that said he attempted to slow down the process. He was, in fact, a cheerleader for this process. Now, as the Central Intelligence as head of Central Intelligence for the United States, who knows what would have happened if he sat there at that time. And if he wasn't being listened to stand up and say, all right, you know what, my job, I can't do my job because no one's listening, and then resign. He could have done that. And who knows what the results of that would have been. It certainly would have been a matter of debate, and perhaps we would have talked about it and debated it a little bit more, given us a little more time to gather additional information, and perhaps the outcome would have been different.
He describes, and the director of Central Intelligence does meet with the president every day, and he does describe, and this has been talked about quite a bit, that there, from his perspective, was no significant debate within the administration about the war in Iraq. As you understand the job of the director of Central Intelligence, is it appropriate for them to start a debate or start a conversation before a country goes to war?
Well, exactly this. These were very unique times. These were very unique times. And yes, he can't sit back, I don't think, at this point and say, you know what, we never talked about it. He should have demanded that we talk about it. If there was a predisposition to go to war in Iraq, and in fact he was getting intelligence that said he didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, he should have stood up and forcefully held such a meeting himself, whether he was with the Defense Department or the National Security Council or whatever. I don't get the sense that he really knows how powerful of a position he had. In many instances, he's acting like a staff person, saying, well, you know, I told Condoleezza Rice this. They wouldn't convene. We gave the information to staff. Staff would brief the president and those kinds of things. And if they didn't have meetings, then it wasn't my fault. It was their fault for not having the meetings. But you know what? At that level, you have input. You have influence. And at times, you need to exercise that, even if the people around you are going the opposite way. Fact of the matter is, he admits to being in the center of the storm. When you're in the center of the storm, you need a calm hand on the tiller. And based on what I have seen, there was no calm hand on the tiller in the administration. And as a result, we are where we are today.
And we're about a minute away from our first break here, and this is a very public letter. You've gotten a lot of press attention as well for this letter. I know you're speaking for yourselves, but do you think there are a number of either ex-CIA officers or people within the agency today who feel as strongly as you do?
Absolutely. I have received numerous emails and other communications from people that are currently employed at the agency, saying thank you for saying the things that we cannot say.
Has the agency been hurt by what Tenet either did or didn't do?
I think in a major way he politicized the agency. He allowed administration officials to come in there, speak directly with mid-level managers, things of that nature. That hasn't happened before. There was a lot of push on the agency personnel to produce intelligence reports of the flavor that they were looking for. That kind of influence, in my estimation, or to my knowledge, has never happened before. The agency is off limits to political folks. It should be. It should be a bastion of truth-telling outside any sphere of political influence.
Well, a quick reintroduction, and then we'll take a short break and get back to our conversation. That's Jim Marcinkowski, and he's one of six former CIA agents who have criticized George Tenet for being, quote, a willing participant in a poorly considered policy to start an unnecessary war. George Tenet's book has come out, and we're talking with Jim Marcinkowski. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Morris Arboretum presents its annual plant sale May 12th and 13th, featuring a selection of rare plants for the garden, located in Chestnut Hill. Details available at morrisarboretum.org. Morris Arboretum supports WHYY.
Hello, I'm David Rubinson of the WHYY staff, and I'm proud to work here, proud to meet you when I go around the Delaware Valley, and people say they listen to me, and I know they're listening to me at this time. So I'm asking, as I ask you when I see you in person, are you a member? If not, please become a member. 888-345-9499. I would hope you know that number by now. You can pledge online at whyy.org, or again, 888-345-9499.
Former CIA Chief George Tenet tells his side of the story about the events leading to September 11th and the war in Iraq in his new memoir. We'll talk with Tenet on the next Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Hey, want to be a radio star? You can enter the Public Radio Talent Quest at publicradioquest.com. Three finalists will win cash and the chance to make a show. So go to publicradioquest.com and enter today. That's publicradioquest.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. George Tenet's much-awaited book, At the Center of the Storm, was published earlier this week. He's gotten a fair amount of press attention, and he's also gotten some criticism from six former CIA officers who have written a letter saying that literally, or essentially, he has blood on his hands for not doing more to stop the war. And we're talking with one of those CIA officers. His name is Jim Marcinkowski. He joined the CIA, served as a case officer in Washington, D.C. and in Central America from 1985 to 1989. He was a classmate of Valerie Plame. In fact, testified before Congress about the Valerie Plame affair. He's currently the attorney for the city of Royal Oaks, Michigan. And we called him up to ask him to be a guest today on Radio Time. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jim Marcinkowski, let me just quote from the first paragraph in this letter that you and your fellow officers wrote to George Tenet. You say, in our view, the damage to your reputation is inconsequential compared to the harm your actions have caused for the U.S. soldiers engaged in combat in Iraq and the national security of the United States. I said that you're saying that he has blood on his hands. Is that what you mean by that sentence?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the people that are making the ultimate sacrifice are brave men and women who are over there fighting and are returning for tours of duty. And it was a huge decision, a historic moment in the history of the United States. George Tenet was at the center of the storm. And you know what? He failed in his role as Director of Central Intelligence because, again, intelligence was the basis for all these actions by the United States. He was in charge of that intelligence. He cherry-picked, he allowed it to be cherry-picked, that intelligence, and he has to be held accountable for that.
You also say in this letter that he has a moral obligation to return the Medal of Freedom that he received. He said he believed that he received the Medal of Freedom for the work that the CIA did in Afghanistan. President Bush, in recognizing him, has said that he was one of the first to recognize the growing threat from radical terrorist networks. Why should he give back his medal?
Well, because this president specifically mentioned the great historic events. He included Iraq in there. There was a general standing there with him at the time he received the medal. And we can go back to threats, recognizing the threats. Well, what threat did he recognize in Iraq prior to the invasion? None. Al-Qaeda was not there. Those are the facts. Those are the facts. Yet he went before Congress saying there, in fact, were links between the Iraqi government and Al-Qaeda. That's just not true. He knows it's not true, but yet he allowed those kinds of statements to be made, and he repeated those kinds of statements in the public realm for people to be persuaded that they were doing the right thing. And whether it's the aluminum tubes in Iraq, that story died really fast. Whether it's Al-Qaeda in Iraq, whether it was nuclear weapons in Iraq, whether it was Niger in the acquisition of Yellow Cake, all those kinds of things were going on at the time, and he allowed a lot of that to happen, or at least he should have stood up and screamed from any forum that this, in fact, was not going on. So he getting the medal for those bad decisions, I think, is inappropriate. He needs to give it back.
Well, and there's still debate today about weapons of mass destruction, and you say in this letter that the CIA did an investigation of whether Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction and came to a conclusion September 2002 that essentially he didn't have, the stockpiles that people thought he did have.
Well, that's exactly correct. They had the information in front of him. When he talks about the intelligence process, you can do a lot of things with the intelligence material. And he's passionate about describing that process.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, presentation means everything. You know, you usually have a statement that we believe this, and then you're going to have the contrary view. If you bury the contrary view in an index or in a way in the back of the report, then no one's going to get there. So presentation is a very, very important thing, how it's presented. He didn't present it very well at all because there were at least data that showed that was not correct at the time he made the statements that again, allowing Powell to say that weapons of mass destruction were a fact.
And this goes back to this national intelligence estimate that was written, published in the fall of 2002, just a couple of months before Powell's talk at the Union and at the United Nations, rather, and then, of course, the beginning of the war a month later.
That's correct. You know, and here's the major problem. He was fixing the intelligence to the predisposition of the White House to go into this conflict. That is apparent from the Downing Street memos. There's documentary evidence that that was what was going on, as he told the then head of British intelligence back in 2002. So there's even documentary evidence to show that, in fact, he was twisting or shaping the intelligence to fit the policy of this White House.
Why do you think he was doing that? I mean, perhaps it's an unfair question both to you and to him.
Well, you know what? I to tell you the truth, based on Mr. Tenet's experience in Washington, he's very political. He's a survivor. He rose to the top coming out of the, as a staffer from Capitol Hill. He wanted to be a team player, I think. I think he wanted to be a team player. And at the time, none of us, of course, expected 9/11, and we were in a state of shock. He wasn't used to not being a team mm-hmm. player. I think he was trying too hard to please the White House. And I'll say this. Look at the people he was up against. Look at Baghdad Don Rumsfeld. I mean, can you imagine sitting in a room and trying to have a civil debate with Donald Rumsfeld? These were the architects of this conflict. And I think when it came time to sit down with those kinds of people in a room, that George wasn't able to meet that high bar and actually take some of these people on.
Do you think, though, that the head of then Central Intelligence should come from the agency itself, as opposed to he came from Congress and was appointed, we should add, first by Bill Clinton and then stayed on into the beginnings and middle of the Bush administration, first Bush administration?
Which sends up a red flag there. Everyone said, you know, hey, this guy gets along with everybody, right? From the very beginning, I think it was a headline or at least a title of an article from the New York Times that talked about, hey, the new head of the CIA, you know, gets praised from both sides because he gets along with everybody. Hey, you know what? Sometimes, you know, times change, people don't. And seems to me that he kept that attitude or his method of operating in the government. He took that right from Capitol Hill over to the CIA. And when he sat at the table with the super hawks of this administration, he wasn't able to stand on his own and say, okay, guys, I think this is wrong. I think we need to slow down. I think we need to have more discussions. And I don't think he was up to the task.
You also say, and then we'll get to our callers here, that he should give the royalties from the book to soldiers and families wounded and killed in Iraq. I mean, are you saying that as a way of embarrassing him, or do you honestly think he should do that?
No, he honestly should do that. Here, look at this nation has been debating this war for years now. Where was George Tenet? Where was George Tenet? He hasn't been around until he publishes a book from which he's going to get millions of dollars, and now he's going to come out and say, well, you know, it wasn't my fault, and this happened, and that happened. One other example.
Go ahead.
When Valerie Plame Wilson was exposed by the White House, what did George Tenet say? He said absolutely nothing. And that is absolutely consistent with his inability to speak up in times of crisis in that White House, at the NSC, in any other kind of meeting he had. Now he gets on television some 3 years later and says, that was outrageous. Hey, well, thanks a lot. You're just a couple years late on coming to the table to express your views on that. He should have been outraged at the time. Now, I'll tell you something else. He never made contact with Valerie Plame to apologize, to say anything to her after she was exposed. That was his agent, and he said nothing, not even to her in the quiet of the CIA. Not a word was spoken.
And you're a friend of hers?
Absolutely.
I mean, you would if he had called her, you would know that?
I would know that, yes.
So it's his silence, as much as almost anything else, that rankles you so much?
We have people that are dying every single day in a war overseas that we probably shouldn't have been involved in to begin with. And you can't, how many people have died over the last 3 years? This is an important debate. It's important for the future of the country. It's important to what's going on today and tomorrow and next week. And unfortunately, he hasn't entered the debate until just now. And how many people and lives have we lost in the last 3 years? And he has stayed on the sidelines and said nothing. Now he writes a book. He comes out. He's trying to say it's not my fault. And for the little things that he does take responsibility for, they amount to not much of anything. And he should somehow show that he is concerned for the mistakes that he made and his inability to speak up. He needs to take those royalties and give them to the families of the maimed and wounded.
And are you as angry at Colin Powell for, in many ways, his silence? I mean, he has said about that UN presentation, it was, you know, one of the worst, you know, moments of his life. But do you also have this anger at him as well?
No, not at Colin Powell. I mean, he stood up and said, you know, it was the worst moment of his life. He knew that. There were a lot of people misled by this administration. You can include the entire Congress, right, who voted for the war in Iraq. A lot of people were misled. And when you take that trail of misleading information, it goes right back to George Tenet.
And that's Jim Marcinkowski, our guest today on Radio Times. He's one of six former CIA agents who have written an open letter to George Tenet criticizing him for a number of things that he did and didn't do when he was director of the Central Intelligence Agency. We are talking with Marcinkowski because George Tenet's book, which has been published at the Center of the Storm, has gotten a lot of press. And we invited Jim Marcinkowski to share some of his comments and observations with us. He's currently the attorney for the city of Royal Oaks, Michigan, and he had mentioned Valerie Plame. He was a CIA classmate of Valerie Plame and had testified before Congress about the outing of Valerie Plame. And we've got a full bank of calls here. Let's see what Vinny from Langhorne has to say. Vinny, go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'd like to bring another equation, another factor into this equation.
Go ahead.
By the way, I had a lot of respect for Powell until the UN... until the UN presentation. And I could not understand how a man with his background, realizing that Iraq after the 10-year war with Iran, the first Gulf invasion, the sanctions, the second war, how Powell could not come to the conclusion that Iraq was on, you know, a bunch of Boy Scouts could have gone in there and beaten the Republican Guard. But what I want to know is, was Powell involved in any way? Because my feeling is that oil has played a very large part in this whole thing, and we hear very little of that. We hear about
let me just jump in here because I don't want to get too off on a tangent here. We're talking very specifically about George Tenet and his book and some of the criticisms of our guest. But let me take the first part of your question, and I'll put it to our guest, Jim Marcinkowski. From your reading, and I realize you probably don't have the exact knowledge that you would need to answer his question directly, but as Colin Powell and George Tenet were preparing for that United Nations presentation, what did Powell know? Obviously, clearly he was relying on George Tenet for information, but how do you, I guess, wrestle with that?
Well, I think it's fairly simple. George Tenet was head of intelligence collection for the United States. He was the guy. And if you wanted to know anything about intelligence, you go to George Tenet and you ask him a question, and he should give you the truth and what the answer is to the best of his ability. So if you're over at the State Department or if you're over at the White House, you don't necessarily have all the information in front of you, and you have to trust the source of the information itself, in this case, George Tenet. So the fact that Colin Powell went out and started saying the weapons of mass destruction was fact, mm-hmm. as far as their presence in Iraq, that was not his fault as much as it was George Tenet's fault. Same with the war and the misleading of Congress, I believe. That all goes back to the intelligence and how it was presented.
And I'm looking here at some information from NPR on their website. This is also about George Tenet and the CIA. The organization failed to foresee India's 1998 nuclear test, the attacks against the U.S. embassies in East Africa, the bombing of the USS Cole in Yemen, and, of course, the attacks of September 11th. So, I mean, that just sort of enlarges the conversation and maybe raises even larger questions about the CIA itself.
Well, that's exactly right. At the, prior to 9/11, the agency wasn't up to par. I think that was clear from some of the declassified briefings from the various House and Senate Intelligence Committees that they weren't up to the task. They didn't have the proper resources on the ground, didn't have the proper agents in place back in the late 90s, and they should have been working on that thing for a long, long time. But there's a lot of people to blame for that, whether it's the oversight committees of the Congress or the director of the CIA himself.
Let me get Jim from Havertown to join us. Jim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi. Thanks. There.
It seems to me that Tenet got that medal to keep him quiet. It's a way. It's a good public relations way to say to the country, George did a good job, and it keeps the press away from asking him questions because he's supposedly a hero that's got a medal. It's like giving somebody who's dumped a brass watch or something when he's fired.
Jim Marcinkowski, do you see it that way?
You know, that's an interesting comment because I think that goes along with Mr. Tenet's inability to criticize the president throughout his book. Now, I haven't read the complete thing yet, but I haven't seen criticism in the parts that I've read so far. And that goes right along with that. You cannot sit back and say, Condoleezza Rice was at fault, Don Rumsfeld was at fault, Dick Cheney was at fault, and then say nothing about the president himself. That was his team. He picked them. He put them on the ground. He put them in operation. And for him to sit back now, and again, I see that as politics, and not hold the president responsible for those decisions is beyond me. So the medal kind of fits right in there. He gets along with the president. He's a nice guy. He gets along with everybody. Well, that's fine. But we were talking about War and Peace here, and friendships come in secondary to that.
You mentioned this earlier, and this is part of your letter, the question being, well, what could he have done? And one of the things that you and your co-authors of this letter say is that he could have gone to Congress and talked with Republicans, Democrats, either publicly, privately, about some of his concerns?
No, they have a House Intelligence Committee. They have a Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. He can meet with those leaders anytime he wants. That's his prerogative. If he was in a situation where he didn't think he was being listened to at the White House, or he was being ignored, or he wasn't allowed to put a light on some issues that he thought were important, he should have went over to the Capitol Hill and spoken with at least the chairman of those committees, if not the entire committees, in saying, look, this is the problem I'm having here, and you guys got to help us out. And, this is war and peace. This isn't routine kind of things. This is war and peace. These are huge decisions. You want to be a team player and stay with the White House, stay with the executive branch. But if that fails, I think you have an obligation to go wherever you think it's important and appropriate. And in this case, the Intelligence Committees would be appropriate to raise those concerns.
Another short break, then we'll get back to our conversation with Jim Marcinkowski, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. And he's one of six former CIA agents who have written an open letter to George Tenet, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency and author of a new book just out called At the Center of the Storm. That book is getting a lot of attention, both positive and negative. And Jim Marcinkowski and his co-authors of this letter have a number of very pointed criticisms of George Tenet and his handling of intelligence and the war in Iraq. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
JerseyArts.com supports WHYY with information on upcoming events, including the Apple Farm Arts and Music Festival presented by Comcast, featuring Joan Armatrading, Amos Lee, Leon Redbone, Chris Smither, and more in an outdoor day of family fun Saturday, June 2nd. Tickets at 1-800-394-1211 or applefarm.org. Complete information on theater, music, dance, and more online at JerseyArts.com.
Next time on Day to Day.
Singer Babel Gilberto is still adjusting to some big changes on her latest CD.
The songs extend well beyond her Brazilian roots, and many of them are in English.
Singing in English is like wearing high heels and lipstick. It's not really you, someone else. Not in
there. It's Babel Gilberto's musical makeover.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Thank you.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Will Turkey remain secular or become more Islamic? We'll gauge the political turmoil there. Also, Jamestown at 400. Was it the birthplace of the American dream or a nightmare? One historian says a little of both. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let me just quickly reintroduce our guests. Jim Marcinkowski joined the CIA, served as a case officer in Washington, D.C. and Central America from 1985 to 89. In 2003, he joined two former CIA agents in testifying before Congress about Valerie Plame. He ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. Congress, defeated by Republican Mike Rogers, and currently is the attorney for the city of Royal Oaks, Michigan, and he's one of six former CIA agents who wrote an open letter to George Tenet about his book and about some of the revelations in the book as well. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Lyle from Upper Darby to join us. Lyle, go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd just like to ask, I'd like to be inspired by his call to action, but I guess I'm a little confused. I find myself in a comparable situation. I'm an attorney. I served in the Army National Guard for 8 years, so that's four more years as a quote-unquote mid-level manager. I haven't yet written a letter denouncing Colin Powell or the Joint Chiefs, et cetera, or made broad statements based on my deep knowledge of the inner workings of the military, denouncing the war. And I guess I'm just wondering what I'm missing here, if your guest has extra knowledge, or, you know, I'm not sure what the story here is.
No, I think it's a fair question, Lyle, and I appreciate you calling into Radio Times. Jim Marcinkowski, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would use the leak case as an example. It was myself and my colleagues who were the first ones to stand up and say, listen, the exposure of a CIA officer for the first time in the history of the United States, because it was done by the government of the United States, and we now know specifically the White House, were we supposed to sit back and do nothing? At critical times, and that was a critical time, it takes people to stand up and say, wait a minute, this is the way the country works. I am not inside the agency criticizing the agency. I am trying to help that agency. And the emails I get from people on the inside are saying, keep going, that you're saying the things that we can't, because they don't like it either. This White House exposed an undercover officer for the first time in history that had national security ramifications for the people of the United States. She was an expert in weapons of mass destruction.
And this
I'll say that again. She was an expert in weapons of mass destruction, and she was exposed by this White House, by these same characters, for no good reason other than politics. Now, if I for one, will not sit back and allow the agency and the security of this country to be hurt like that. I will do whatever I have to do to bring that to whatever public forum I can to make sure it never happens again, and the people responsible for it are held accountable.
But what you're saying, though, Jim Marcinkowski, is you see a pattern here.
Absolutely. These guys are playing politics. They're playing politics with the CIA. Again, unprecedented in the history of the CIA. Politics belongs on the other side of the Potomac, on Capitol Hill, in the White House. It doesn't belong in the CIA. We're hurting the CIA. We're hurting our opportunities overseas to recruit agents because we can't keep our secrets. I can go down the list of all the things that these people have done to this agency. I think it's totally outrageous because when all is said and done, they're weakening the ability of the United States to protect itself, and they're not protecting as well as they could the people of the United States.
Lyle, thanks for the call. Let me get Larry from Westchester to join us. Larry, go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Good.
My question is this. This is not the first time that the intelligence community has been co-opted by an administration. The Johnson administration co-opted the intelligence community, getting us into Vietnam. My question is, how can we prevent this from happening in the future? What steps can we take? I'll take my answer off the air.
I appreciate the call, Larry. Let me just preface that, and to you, Jim Marcinkowski, do you see the same kind of pattern? I mean, what Larry's saying is this isn't the first time that the CIA has been politicized. Go back to the Johnson administration in Vietnam.
Well, I'm not so sure that the agency was co-opted. I mean, it was used. Was the intelligence wrong on the information coming back out of Vietnam? I don't think the circumstances were exactly the same here. What can be done? Number one, you can keep the politicians out of out of the CIA.
And you mean that literally, keep them out of the building?
Yes. I can't see any reason why the vice president or Don Rumsfeld or anyone else should be able to come over there and talk to people at the agency. Just the mere presence. Think about sitting in the room with the president of the United States or with the vice president of the United States, and it's going to change your behavior. Consciously or subconsciously, you will act differently. All right, and you, when you leave a meeting, especially if questions were asked and issues were raised and perhaps things were noted of interest, you will, in the back of your mind, try to pursue those kinds of questions and issues and things of that nature. My point is, there's no reason for those people to ever go over to the CIA other than to give out awards to people for outstanding performance.
that's the only reason to be in the building.
That includes me. That's the only reason they should be in that building. Because, again, we're in a process of trying to determine what the truth is. We're making best judgments. We're doing those kinds of things. And you know what? When you're making judgments, it's like the scales of justice. Sometimes it takes just a minute amount of information to change the balance. And, you know, the presence of a high-ranking government official that has an agenda in that building can have such an impact.
Oh, Larry, thanks for the call to Radio Times. To you, Jim, and I'm looking actually at the transcript of the 60 Minutes interview that was done with George Tenet, and they got to a kind of a back and forth on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the question whether he was tortured or not. And Pelly, the 60 Minutes correspondent, kept talking about waterboarding, and George Tenet said he didn't really want to answer the question, but he said we don't torture, but he didn't. It was a very ambiguous back and forth that they had there. Does the CIA torture people?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was in the CIA, you you didn't torture people. You didn't do a lot of things that I think are going on today. I saw that exchange as well, and I can tell you this. Yeah, was he playing coy with that? Yes, he was. He mm-hmm. wasn't answering the questions. He didn't want to answer the question, and that's okay. I understand that. He doesn't want to talk about techniques. And I understand the reasons why. Should we be doing torture? Absolutely no. There's no circumstance in which torture helps. That's the way I was trained. Because we were trained, and they told us directly, we are hiring you to collect reliable information. You never get reliable information under torture, ever. So don't even try it. It's not worth it. It's just a dead end. So never do it. But the interesting thing about that exchange mm-hmm. that you refer to mm-hmm. was the fact that George Tenet falls back on the Justice Department to say, well, you know, these things were run by the Justice Department. Now, as a lawyer, I have some serious problems with this Justice Department. We can talk about emails, we can talk about phone records, we can talk about the Patriot Act, we can talk about wiretaps, we can talk about a whole host of things that came out of this Justice Department, and why anybody would believe in this Justice Department, I can't fathom that.
Well, and I'm looking again at this transcript and what Tenet says, and with again being very ambiguous about what actually was done to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, but he says, "I know this program has saved lives. I know we have disrupted plots,"
and that may very well be true. That may very well be true. And the real question, whether it's torture, whether it's the war in Iraq, is, yes, you may get immediate results, but let's look at the long term. Do you think once it gets out what is going on with these people and they take it back to their families, if and when they're ever released, that it's going to create a safer environment as far as those people's attitudes towards the United States? We have lost a lot of credibility worldwide. We always stood for something. We stood on principle. We stood on democracy, open government, those kinds of things. And this administration mm-hmm. is going full bore backwards. We're creating more enemies in this world than we had before 9/11. And the march goes on. Al-Qaeda is now fully saturated in Iraq. They weren't there prior to our invasion, and we're on the wrong course. We have to fix it, because while we may get through these techniques short-term gains, the long term, the long view, is we're harming, ultimately, the security of people in the United States.
And I do want to get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Although, Jim Marcinkowski, you mentioned the Justice Department, and in this open letter, you describe George Tenet as the Alberto Gonzalez of the intelligence community.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Alberto Gonzalez goes in front of Congress. They're talking about, you know, the most recent episode having to do with the firing of the U.S. attorneys, and he tells everyone, or the White House, or someone tells everyone that, you know, none of these guys were involved. As it turns out, they get emails. They find out a lot more people are involved. The White House is involved. Everyone's making these political decisions. There's investigations being conducted by those U.S. attorneys in some cases. And they turn around and they say, well, they weren't fired for political reasons. And you know what? They've been caught. He's already been caught in a number of misstatements. And that's the way the Justice Department is operating. You know, that gives me chills.
Let me get to Jay from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us. Jay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Your guest was talking about being trained not to torture people.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, in the time he was in the CIA, torturing was full-time outsourced to the Central and South American regimes, the henchmen, as we now know from declassified documents. I was wondering, was he aware of that, or was he raising questions about the torturing that is now documented, the generals throwing people from planes into the sea, etc.?
Jay, thanks for the call. And you were in Central America. I'm not sure where in Central America you were, Jim Marcinkowski, but go ahead.
Yes, there's no question that they had some very aggressive, just bad, crazy right-wing regimes down in Central America. There's no question about it. But, you know, as a CIA officer, you don't get the opportunity to pick the government that you get to, or the country and the government that you go to all the time, and you do the best job you can. Was some of that probably going on with the governments? Yes. Are some of those things going on in the governments today around the world? Yes, they are. That doesn't mean we stay away from other things. We get in there and we try to change that behavior, but we had never participated in that, and I think if CIA knew things like that were going on, it'd certainly be reported, and I, being on the ground, would have tried to stop that. There's no question in my mind about that.
Jay, thanks for the call. Let me get Paul from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us. Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks
there.
For taking my call. I just wanted to note that there was a Secretary of the Treasury, Snow, who wrote a book after he was fired from the first Bush administration. And he mentioned that the very first topic and the very first staff meeting or cabinet meeting held by the very first Bush administration, the topic of overthrowing Saddam Hussein was raised. It was a country that did no act against us, and they had an agenda from the very beginning. Tenet was aware of it from the very beginning, and he did nothing, to make that known to the public that there was this war being trumped up, and that's part of his responsibility. And the fact that he writes this book now that he says he feels like he was used is really just pure nonsense.
Paul, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Anything you want to add to that, Jim?
Oh, I would agree. I think George recognizes that there was a predisposition. The real question becomes, okay, knowing that, what did you do? Did you remain silent, or did you take affirmative action to try to change that predisposition if you knew it was wrong or based on at least a faulty or weak intelligence?
You had mentioned earlier looking ahead to how to prevent the kinds of problems that we've been talking about, the idea of keeping political people out of the Central Intelligence Agency in Langley. What, though, do you think should be the relationship between the Director of Central Intelligence and the President of the United States?
He should be able to go there, in no matter what the circumstance is, sit there and speak truth to power, as they say in Washington. He needs to speak truth to power, and it has to be the ultimate truth. It can't be shaped or molded into fitting the president's predisposition or policy wants. It's got to be the truth and nothing but the truth. If he doesn't have that relationship, then we have a problem. If he even feels the need or doesn't feel comfortable doing that, then he's either over his head or he doesn't belong in his position, because they have to ultimately have the trust of the president. You have to have a relationship where you can tell that president everything, including the criticisms of other administration officials who may be predisposed to go to war, and point that out, start the argument about those persons and their activities. And the question becomes, did he do any of that? Did he have that working relationship? Did he have that trust factor to be able to tell the president anything and everything? I don't think that that was there.
Do you want to talk to George Tenet? I mean, it's part of the letter. It doesn't sound like he's going to do it, at least at this point, but it was part of the letter to try to get a conversation started with him directly?
Well, I didn't think we ever, none of us would expect to have a conversation with him, but I would welcome a conversation with him to go over some of the issues and the claims that he has raised. I mean, because they aren't very complicated. Let me use one other example.
Yeah, we only have about 30 seconds, but go ahead.
State of the Union address. He didn't look at the State of the Union address before the president delivered those famous 16 words. He passed it to a staff person. There is no more important thing to do when the president's about to speak to the nation and the world than to take 20 minutes out of your very busy day and read that. Huge mistake. He was asleep at the switch.
And he did admit that. I mean, he admitted that was a mistake. But you're saying that was an egregious mistake.
It how could you not read that? That's the part I don't get. Yeah, you can say, well, I made a mistake. No, that's a big one. That's a big one. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, you can't sit there and say, well, I'm off the hook now because I admitted my mistake. No, that was one of the reasons why this country was hyped into a war.
Well, Jim Marcinkowski, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty.
And Jim Marcinkowski has been our guest, one of the six former CIA agents who have criticized George Tenet in an open letter. And I should add that George Tenet is Terry Gross's guest, and that's this afternoon on Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us. For more information about the program, go to whyy.org. Devorah Lissick, Alan Tu, and Susan Greenbaum produced the program. And you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.